Our third speaker, I can call him a local, is Bruce Brown, and Bruce is the General Manager of the Nemoi Catchment Management Authority. Bruce has had extensive senior management experience across a number of agribusiness industries. These roles have involved profit centre management, strategic planning, business development and marketing activities. And today, Bruce is going to speak to us about the agricultural sector, productivity and natural resource management. Please welcome Bruce Brown.
Thanks very much, Kevin, and thanks, Philip, for your kind invitation. And I guess in taking on some of Judith's comments, I think some of the outcomes of the study are particularly important for the Namoi, particularly given that something like 49% of the gross value of agricultural production in this valley comes from the irrigation industries. But let me get on with some of my thoughts. And I guess when I was penning some thoughts for the paper, I was particularly taken by some comments by Professor Ross Garnaut. As you know, he doesn't pull too many punches when he talks to politicians and certainly Treasury officials. And this was a recent address that he gave to some senior Treasury officials when he talked about the fact that the Australian public had come to expect too much prosperity too easily. And he also bemoaned the fact that Australia's political culture had become too timid to make strong decisions. And I guess, Kevin, he was talking about federal parliamentarians there rather than state ones. But importantly, he went on to make some interesting comments about productivity growth. And he was bemoaning the fact that Australia's productivity growth had fallen from being amongst the best in the world during the previous decade, during the 1990s, to being amongst the lowest in the developed world currently. And I think in that context, and I want to come back to some of those productivity ratios a little bit later when I talk more generically about the level of funding which NRM investment receives from government. But there are also some potentially dark clouds on the horizon for Australian agriculture. After some three decades of very strong productivity growth, it's now confronted by a productivity slowdown, which may in fact not offset the impacts of the farm in terms of trade. And that will be the first time in 20 years that this has actually occurred. So what I'm really going to do today is to explore the productivity slowdown, some of the reasons for it, look at some of the possible implications of that for investment in natural resource management by the farm sector, and also some of the other investment entities that are involved in natural resource management. And I'm also going to look at a few financial ratios which would question, I guess to some extent, the future resilience of the farm sector. So let's move on and talk about productivity growth in the sector. And the graph there doesn't actually disclose in any shape or form some of the slowdown, and I'll come to that a little bit later in my presentation. But you can see broadly that the productivity growth has broadly offset the decline in the farm terms of trade over that 30-year period. And if I actually chopped that graph actually off at about the year 2000, productivity growth was certainly significantly higher than the downward movement in the farm terms of trade. What made up then productivity growth? And you can see there that the productivity growth on an annual footing basis of 1.4% was made up of output growth of 0.81% in each year and a reduction in inputs of 0.6%. But importantly, the productivity growth in Australian agriculture is not evenly spread. It differs very much between industries, and it actually differs very much within individual industries. And you can see there that while average broadacre productivity growth is about 1.4% per annum, it varies across those industries, starting at the top from the cropping sector, and certainly there are elements of broadacre irrigation which have productivity growth significantly in excess of that 1.9%. It falls down through the mixed farming sector to 1.4, beef 1.5, and always the laggard is the sheep industry. And I always remember that when I was on a Victorian Wool Industry Task Force in the mid-90s, that at the time the Victorian industry, up until that stage over the previous 20 years, had grown at a productivity growth rate of 0.1%. per annum over the previous 20 years, when the farm terms of trade was declining by around 2%. and I guess it's still basically an old-fashioned industry. Let's have a look then at some of the movements that have occurred across individual industries within the sector. And while this might be a little bit hard to look at, what we've done is we've actually divided the broad acre farm survey information up on the basis of farm size. And while it's less than perfect, we've used a carrying capacity on DSEs to give us those 33 percentile breaks. So we've got three groups, the bottom 33%, the middle 33%, and the top 33%. And what that actually illustrates is quite significant. It means that the bottom third of Australian agriculture has virtually achieved no productivity growth over a 30-year period. The middle group, if you like, the mid-sized farms, have achieved certainly some productivity growth, but almost certainly not enough to offset that decline in the farm terms of trade. And it's the top sector, the top third there, or what I'll talk about during the rest of this paper, the top quartile, that have purloined virtually all of the productivity growth in Australian agriculture. The important thing, I think, that stems from that is that some of the pressures on Australian agriculture are occurring at a time when its adaptive capacity is really going to be quite sorely tested. I mean, we have an extremely high A-dollar on the cross rates, certainly short-term, short to medium-term. I guess we've got the impacts, and Jude spoke about that a little while ago, the impacts of major government policy initiatives on Australian agriculture, in particular actually a reduction in the Murray-Darling Basin cap. And all of this is happening at a point when productivity growth is starting to slow. We also probably should have a look at the profit figures and the cash figures, the cash income figures, for Australian agriculture as a whole. And that doesn't, it actually hides what I call an increase in dualism in the farm sector. You can see there that the cash figures, or the cash income figures, have been broadly positive across that 20-year period from the early 90s. The salient thing, I guess, is that after adjustments for non-cash items such as depreciation, operator allowances, is that the average farm profit actually has hardly broken through the zero figure for the best part of 20 years. And I think this is a really salient point when one looks at Australian agriculture, is that we've got 80% of the farm units that are generating around just slightly under 50% of farm output, and they're actually reducing the aggregate profitability, and I'm talking about profit in a genuine sense now, profit actually, I'm not talking about cash incomes, by some 49%. And at the other end of the scale, we have 20% of farm units that are producing slightly over 50% of output, and they're actually generating virtually all of the profits from the sector. So let's move on and just have a look at the slowdown in productivity and obviously, given the strong linkage, profitability growth in the sector. As I said, the trend lines over the 30-year period don't highlight the true slowdown that's occurring actually in profitability growth in Australian agriculture since the late 90s. And you can see there is a while of the 20-year period to the late 90s, productivity growth on average was 1.8% per annum. Since then, the trend has been downward over the last decade of about negative 1.3%. And certainly if that continues, then there certainly is some clouds on the horizon for agriculture itself. Some people can make a case for drought impacts being certainly on the eastern seaboard, being the primary reason for that negative, actually, growth in productivity over the last decade. But I think more fundamentally it's associated with a slowdown in public sector R&D expenditure. You'd all be aware that in agriculture there are significant lags in terms of the productivity growth from dollars which are spent in any one particular year, and some of those productivity lags can go out for 10, 15 or 20 years. So since about 1980 on this particular graph, you can see that public sector expenditure on R&D has started to stagnate. not only, I guess, has it started to stagnate, but it's also started to become more diverse, such that a lot of that expenditure is not directed purely at farm gate productivity growth. Some of it's gone off into food safety, occupational health and safety, etc., etc. So the dollars have been spread more widely and not directed particularly at farm gate productivity programs. The yellow line which shows up there actually is what's called, I call, research intensity, and that simply shows actually the percentage of R&D expenditure as a percentage of gross agricultural production. And since the early 1980s, you can see that that line has fallen from around 5% of gross agricultural output down to about 3%. And I think it's also interesting to note that the trend that I'm talking about in Australian agriculture seems to be actually also occurring worldwide. And not that I've read the 500 pages of this particular book, but there was a recent book produced by a group of US authors called Persistence Pays, and it was entitled US Agricultural Productivity Growth and Benefits from Public Sector R&D Expenditure. And they tending to suggest actually that that policymakers across the world have tended to take, or starting to take, agricultural productivity for granted. It's always been there, it's always happened, it'll go on. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And they quote a number of examples of where expenditure on R&D has fallen substantially and has impacted on productivity growth in the sector already. They also claim, of course, that policymakers are more interested in much more immediate benefits from the dollars that are spent rather than having to look for lagged impacts, which in some cases may be out as far as 20 years. But there's another factor which may start to impact on the resilience or the adaptive capacity of Australian agriculture going forward. And that in particular is the very sudden rise in debt structures and the reduction in debt servicing capacity, which has beset the sector really over the last decade, and more particularly in terms of debt servicing over the last 5 years. And you can see there that while receipts growth actually on an average farm basis for the broadacre and dairy industry sectors has stagnated over most of this decade, farm sector debt on an average per farm basis has climbed quite rapidly. Now that in itself actually doesn't really show the true picture. It's the debt servicing ability of agriculture which becomes relatively critical going forward, particularly when its adaptive capacity, as I said, is going to be tested both short and longer term by a wide variety of factors. And you can see there that the percentage of farm cash income expended on interest payments, certainly across the current decade, has risen from around 12% up to over 30% currently. And one would assume, with further interest rate increases in line, that ratio actually will continue to deteriorate. Another important impact, I think, is that while there's been minimal impact at this point on farm equity levels, that in fact has been mainly caused by the fact that land values have risen extremely strongly in the last 4 to 5 years. But another one of the dark clouds on the horizon for Australian agriculture is that we've now, for the first time in 30 years, got a total disconnect between the movements in land values, or that upward rise in land values, and productivity growth. And normally what happens with assets, be they financial or otherwise, when you start to get disconnects between productivity and yield, if you like, then there may be some significant readjustments occurring. I'm certainly not predicting a crash in land values, but I'm just simply highlighting the disparity which has happened. What I wanted to do very briefly in talking more broadly about NRM investment, and certainly the productivity slowdown in the farm sector, where there are going to be smaller investable surpluses for natural resource management, is certainly going to have some impacts on the way in which some of the existing entities that are involved in natural resource management, the existing investment entities that are involved in that area, are going to actually tackle their investment programs going forward. Some brief comments on the regional model. The regional model, I guess, in New South Wales and across Australia has only been in place for a very short period of time, really 5 or 6 years. In a natural resource management sense, that's extremely short, and you'd have to say that its success is going to be monitored over the longer term. I made a quote there, actually, that we almost fell into the regional model because we tried everything else and it was probably the only thing that was left. And while I've used a quote there from Albert Einstein, who once said, actually, you can't solve a problem with the same thinking that created it, I'm more, I guess, taken by a comment that Winston Churchill passed about the Americans when he said, they always get it right in the end after they've evaporated every other possibility. So, and I talked about the embryonic success of this regional model, or in the case of New South Wales, certainly rather than talking about regional investment entities, let me talk about the catchment management authorities. And certainly I believe to this point they have been successful. And I think that owes much to the fact that they're governed by local boards involving local people and that their staff have been close to their regional communities, regional and or catchment communities. And as I suggested, given the fact that the improvements in natural resource condition take some time to monitor and some time to work through the system, then I guess the jury is still out on their longer term performance. So the investment models that have been developed by the CMAs, actually, or the regional investment bodies, have been quite diverse, and they have involved either devolved grants, actually, in some cases, or significant devolved grant activity to third parties, or more investment banking-driven approaches on the other hand. Which one is going to be the more successful? I don't think there's any ready answer to that, because, in fact, one has to consider, I think, the differences in the regional demography, community skills, the existence of natural resource management entities and land care that's stronger in some catchments than it is in others. And, of course, when you look at the differences between coastal communities and the urban planning issues they're facing compared to the issues which are confronted us on this side of the range, they're certainly significantly different. My last comment there, actually, is that I think, actually, we need to particularly guard, and I guess I'm talking my own hat here, actually, but I'm also talking yours, in the sense that we need to guard against any gradual shift back to the centralised agency structures which existed prior to the regional structures where decision-making is close to the issues and it involves local people. I should have made mention of the fact that prior to the establishment of the regional model, that while there were millions, in fact billions of dollars poured into natural resource management across Australia, one would have to say it was ad hoc. It certainly wasn't integrated in any catchment or regional or landscape planning sense. It did, however, actually certainly result in an increase in community knowledge of environmental and NRM issues, which I guess has proved to be a really fertile hunting ground, if you like, for investment entities like ourselves, because the community was simply there, was able to take it on board, and there was not a major education component involved. We go back one? Right. I did want to talk briefly about some of the risks that threaten NRM activities, NRM investment activities. And certainly the points that I made actually earlier about the slowdown in productivity growth and profitability for the ag sector are going to have an impact. I mean, a number of public and private sector commentators have made reference to the fact that anything that impacts on profitability in the rural sector certainly can and does lead to a reduced focus on the maintenance of environmental assets. Falling farm sector productivity growth and obviously the potential productivity impacts may force actually some of the catchment management authorities, or more generally across Australia, those regional entities, to re-examine some of their investment models. And I speak particularly about the investment models which try, as does the Environmental Index, benefits index, which I've listed there, try to allocate public benefits and private benefits and try to fund them accordingly, with the public benefits obviously with taxpayer funds and the private benefits being raised from, in particular, the farm sector, either in cash or in kind. And if those investment surpluses simply start to dry up, then the use of some of these models may have to undergo some changes. There are an interesting range, I guess, of equity issues which always pose challenging questions for regional NRM investment entities. And these are particularly so given this increased dualism that I spoke about across the farm sector. I mean, should they develop different investment models for the top quartile as distinct from the bottom quartile? And really, what's the optimum allocation of taxpayer funds, in the main, between on-ground investment and the more generic investment and education activities? I don't think there are any ready answers to those, but I guess they're always challenging questions to ask. I guess we'll be looking at some of these factors going forward. There are some constraints on NRM funding, and we've seen some of these start to cut in actually already. I mean, certainly during the rounds of NHP, the National Heritage Trust and the National Action Plan on Salinity, there certainly was very significant Commonwealth Government funding flowing through to regional bodies. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, the level of funding, certainly at the AG level, has been reduced under the Caring for Country program. And I'm talking the level of funding specifically which is given to regional NRM investment entities. I guess then it's somewhat ironic, I believe, since the Commonwealth have access to all the fast growth taxes, the strongest tax revenues, that in fact we are now confronted by a situation where it's the states, particularly in New South Wales, that have increased their level of funding of these regional NRM entities. And I guess I'd like to actually certainly make some observations that are positive in that particular area. Possible future constraints, and I'd like to return to some of Ross Garnaut's comments. I mean, it is true that today's productivity growth is tomorrow's economic growth and is also tomorrow's, I guess, budget surpluses. But we've done a good job in Australia up until recently of ignoring prime drivers of productivity growth to the point where productivity growth in the 90s was 2.1% per annum, and I'm talking now at the national economy level, not certainly at the farm sector level. During this decade, it's fallen to 1.6%, but over the last 4 years, it's fallen to 0.5%. Now, if this starts to happen clearly in tandem with an ageing population, then I can see some clouds on the horizon for entities like ourselves, who are in fact going to be hanging off the back of budget deficits which exist because of increase in ageing population, various forms of public expenditure associated with an ageing population. So what does this mean for NRM investment? I guess it means that if one adopts a sensible risk management approach, that you're going to be looking at non-traditional sources of funding, and that clearly involves the private sector funding. Now, whilst it's still embryonic, a number of regional entities across Australia involved in this area have set up environmental trusts to, in fact, if you like, garnish private sector funding to underpin what may be declining public sector funding, certainly over the next decade or so. Some brief concluding remarks then. I guess this is very easy to say and very hard to actually put in place. I mean, certainly NRM investment entities need to be triple bottom line focused. They certainly need to be looking at improved environmental outcomes. They certainly need to be looking at increasing the adaptive capacity of industry, both farm and non-farm, as well as trying to get some good socio-economic outcomes out of their investment programs. as I said, easy to say, hard to do. But there are a number of points which I've just listed there which I think if you're going to be successful as a regional NRM body, you need to have actually focused on. You need to remain cognizant, I guess, of the social and the economic environment confronting regional communities. And in particular, I think you need to focus, as not many regional bodies have, on urban and peri-urban communities. And some of the sustainability stuff we've certainly done in this catchment has really been taken on board quite remarkably. I remember we ran a sustainability house expo in Tamworth last year, and the concept's now been expanded to 3 centres. But we predicted that we might get 500 people going through that facility. Well, we finished up with 3,500 people went through that facility, to the point where I had to offer the owners the opportunity that we would pay for the cleaning. And look, I'm going to leave you with those other thoughts anyway. But I think it is important that effectiveness and efficiency when it comes to NRM funding and delivery continues, particularly given the fact that our funding actually is going to be extremely tight going forward.
So one question, one comment while Bruce is here. Liz, is that you up the back?
Liz Thomas, and Bruce, thank you for a very interesting talk. I'm just wondering if there's been any research, if you know any research on the horrible compounding effect mental health has on that kind of change. Taking up change is what leads to productivity increase. I accept that research is important, what your comments were true and accurate. You have research, but if the research is not taken up, then we're not going to have productivity increase. And my experience is that in the mix, mental health has started to play. Thank you.
Liz, it's a terrific question, and you're asking the wrong person, because most people would say I'm a rationalist. But look, I take your point. Certainly, I think mental health actually in the farm sector is extremely important, particularly in those elements of the farm community that have been under significant pressure, either as a result of drought and or as a result of simply being lower in that profitability profile. And certainly, the better we can get a handle on mental health in that area, the better we're going to be.